This is Johnny Blue Star. Welcome to Threshold, a global media event. Is the universe just a random dance of atoms? Or is it a manifestation of a supremely intelligent architect? Can its purpose, or our purpose here on Earth, be adequately assessed? Can we commune with it, know its intentions, cooperate with its direction? Here, we define Threshold as a gateway state of awareness, allowing mankind to cross into a place of real cognition. Threshold allows us to approach questions of higher reality through the door of experience rather than mere belief. Welcome to Threshold, where we tear away the veil from commercial media, bringing our audience and participants into another realm of reality and enhanced communication.
Well, in our last show, we were discussing the questions of plagiarism at the Republican convention, but that's not very important, as we all agree. But another issue concerning Hillary Clinton is quite serious. And these were questions raised by the possible indictment of Hillary Clinton over the email scandal. First, there was the opportunistic meeting on an airplane tarmac in Phoenix with Bill Clinton with Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, who was about to respond to a forthcoming FBI evaluation of Clinton's culpabilities. How do we evaluate that meeting, which was massively discussed in the press? Further, how do we analyze James Comey's statements about Hillary Clinton's lack of culpability because of her lack of intention to do harm by the leaking of classified material? This is from a transcript by Mark Levin, a broadcaster who was former chief of staff of the Justice Department. He's citing the Section 793 of the Penal Code, subsection F, in what he thinks Hillary Clinton has to worry about. Quote, my point is that when you set up an unsecured server in your barn adjacent to your home in Chappaqua, New York, you have intentionally, forget about negligence, you have intentionally bypassed the security process for that server, he says. He's analyzing her use of this private server while she's Secretary of State. And then he further says, I want to read to you Section 793 of the Penal Code, subsection F, because this is what Hillary, among other things, but in particular what she has to worry about. Here's the law. Whoever being entrusted with or having lawful possession or control of any document, writing, code book, signal book, sketch, photograph, photographic negative, blueprint, plan, map, model, instrument, appliance, note, or information relating to national defense. This is by part of the Espionage Act. Subset 1, through gross negligence, permits the same to be removed from its proper place of custody or delivered to anyone in violation of this trust or be lost, stolen, abstracted, or destroyed. Got that? I'll get to the next section later. I'm hearing on TV, a quote, it depends on her intent. It depends on her intent. No, it doesn't, not with respect to this. And that's what Comey was saying. Comey was saying that they didn't think it was important that she was grossly negative. Or two, having knowledge that the same has been illegally removed from its proper place of custody or delivered to anyone in violation of its trust or lost or stolen or abstracted and so forth. So here's your problem. Subsection 1, through gross negligence, permits the same to be removed from the proper place of custody. The entire server was not supposed to be, it turns out to be, it's in her barn. She has a barn on her property. So any classified information, including top secret information, which is the highest of the classified information, code black, top secret information. I was read into these programs. I was trained. I can't remember everything. I don't have them now. And by the way, it's a lifetime requirement that you keep this information secret. It's not like you leave the administration and go on blabbing about it. No, you can't. You can never talk about it unless it's been declassified. But let me underscore this again. It's in plain English, Section 793. You can Google it yourself for the Penal Code. Whoever is being entrusted with or having lawful possession or control of any document, writing, code book, and so forth, through gross negligence, permits the same to be removed from its proper place of custody or delivered to anyone in violation of this trust. So what do you think, Ken?
I think she violated the law. You know, my book, The Spy Files, is all about the Espionage Act, and it's all well and good if you charge a journalist for violating it, you know, when he gets material from the government. But she knew that this information was classified. She knew that it was top secret, and she knew that it only had to go through the government servers. And she's, for convenience or whatever she did, It's more of a strict liability, and she knew she was breaking the law. She had to have known. She's
but even
not
if
stupid.
She, but it, once you say he's correct in saying, in terms of the letter of the law, that even if she didn't do it intentionally, there was negligence involved.
Well, he's saying gross negligence. Now, usually in the law, Comey is right. Usually there's an intent in every element of a crime, okay? So you have to intend a certain – but if you – for example, you can be convicted of murder if you don't intend to kill somebody. But if you're doing something that's so grossly unsafe that people could be seriously injured, you can be charged with murder or manslaughter.
Isn't this gross negligence? If that's
I think it's gross negligence, yeah.
I mean, I don't like – the fact that intentionality is not somewhat involved as much. He's saying that, no, it doesn't really matter that, you know, no one's been really seriously prosecuted since this law came into being.
Well, they're trying to get Edward Snowden for violating the Espionage Act. There are several people who are there trying to get on, you know, this is a law that came up in World War I, and they're using it now more often than they've ever used it before. I don't agree with it, but I don't agree that the people in government themselves can violate it. I mean, if you're going to do away with it, do away with it. The other thing I think is wrong is she's trying to control these her emails in a way where if someone does want to do a Freedom of Information Act request when they're declassified, we may not be able to get those emails because they're private. So, you know, I think now that's not going to happen because the whole thing's been brought to light. But
well, there's also there's another point is that she actually has admitted to deleting 20,000 of those emails herself under her own discretion.
That's right. Really, what if I make a Freedom of Information Request Act request for that? I'm not going to get it because it doesn't exist.
It would be really interesting to see why she really did it, because she knew what she was doing. So what's the real reason? That is where everything lies.
Well, we're going to go into some of this now. Another challenging aspect of this were the various leaks of the Clinton emails by Marcel Lihe, known as Guccifer, to which there was some advance warning about the leaks released by WikiLeaks about the efforts to undermine Sanders on behalf of Clinton by the Democratic National Committee. And here's a clip from the Democracy Now! And the DNC leaks.
The Democratic National Convention is opening today in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, amid massive party turmoil. Democratic National Committee Chairwoman and Florida Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz has resigned following the release of nearly 20,000 emails revealing how the Democratic Party favored Hillary Clinton and worked behind the scenes to discredit and defeat Bernie Sanders. The emails were released Friday by WikiLeaks. In one email, DNC Chief Financial Officer Brad Marshall suggested someone ask Sanders about his religion ahead of the Kentucky and West Virginia contests. Marshall wrote, quote, "It might make no difference, but for Kentucky and West Virginia, can we get someone to ask his belief? Does he believe in a God? He had skated on saying he has a Jewish heritage. I think I read he is an atheist. This could make several points difference with my peeps. My Southern Baptist peeps would draw a big difference between a Jew and an atheist," unquote. In another email, Debbie Wasserman Schultz calls Sanders campaign manager Jeff Weaver a, quote, "damn liar."
A third email shows National Press Secretary Mark Pastenbach writing, quote, "wondering if there's a good Bernie narrative for a story, which is that Bernie never, ever had his act together, that his campaign was a mess," unquote. Multiple emails show the DNC complaining about MSNBC coverage of the party and of communications director Luis Miranda, once writing, quote, "effing Joe, claiming the system is rigged, party against him. We need to complain to their producer," unquote, referring to Joe Scarborough. Other emails suggest the DNC was gathering information on Sanders' events and that a super PAC was paying people to counter Sanders supporters online.
Also, in a part of this discussion, which we didn't record, Julian Assange remarks that perhaps the most important emails were those that contained spreadsheets documenting the donors to the DNC, not just the names, but also the way the money was offered, in what Julian Assange called a pay-for-play scenario. So, first of all, how should we react to this part of it? I mean, there's several parts to it. Part of it is that she just sent out classified information,
Bill Clinton meeting with the Attorney General to try to make sure she doesn't get prosecuted. I mean, that's
crazy.
Horrible. Yeah,
that's just blatant. It's blatant going around the rules.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. But it's startling how the Clintons seem to, and I'm not saying they do because I can't absolutely prove anything any more than anyone else can at this point myself, but they seem to just lay their lack of caring about the law or about their perception right on the table. I mean, here she writes she goes and delivers these speeches to financial institutions for tremendous amounts of money, and she won't release the documents, and she gets away with it.
But what do you think of Donald Trump not releasing his tax returns?
I think it's fascinating.
That's ridiculous. I think it's ridiculous. I mean, people should know that. I mean, it's obvious that he doesn't pay more taxes than I do, I'm sure. But you know, that's the way rich people structure their estates, so they don't pay taxes.
Well,
it's a lie. It's a non-disclosure. That's a lie.
It's all the same. You can lie by non-disclosing, by non-action, not talking can be a lie.
We actually have an atmosphere pervaded by the government officials of non-concern about whether there's law breaking. I mean, people are doing things right out in the open.
If you have enough money to get around the law, why should you care if you break it or not? That's the thing. I mean, weapons of mass destruction, Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any?
No.
Come on, that's what my new book, Beyond All Recognition, is all about.
Yeah.
It's a war where 1 million Iraqis were killed. Thousands of U.S. servicemen were killed. Thousands more lives were interrupted and screwed up forever. And why? So a bunch of people could make a bunch of money based on lies.
Yeah. Well,
nobody's going to jail for that, Johnny. Nobody.
Right.
Except the people who take the orders at the smaller levels of the military. They're putting them in jail. They're court-martialing them for following orders. That's what my book is about.
Well, and we're making the rest of the world really hate us when they see us do things like that.
Absolutely.
They don't trust us. Why would they after we did something like that?
Yeah. And we talk about that. I mean, I don't think that anything justifies these terrorist actions killing innocent people. But do they really think that they have no role in encouraging violence by doing so much injustice to so many people in these Middle Eastern countries?
They're making them desperate. They're becoming desperate. And so they're radicalizing people by making them desperate. If you kill my whole family I'll make this quick. If you kill my whole family and you eliminate my ability to take care of myself, I'm going to be desperate. And I don't care if I die doing what I need to do.
Yes, certain of those people who are probably fairly normal can be tipped over the edge and turn themselves into more or less what you call haters. And
it's too bad, right?
It is too bad, and it's a failure of not only national policy but national conscience.
Well, the whole thing was actually worsened. This whole ISIS coming to power was created by the United States and involvement in Iraq. I mean, we ruined the infrastructure. We took out the existing government that was there based on lies, executed the existing leader based on lies, and then we supported one group against the other in a civil war like we always do. And lo and behold, the group that we really pissed off decided we're gonna fight back. And they're using this Islamic ideology in a very bad way to try to convince people that they should kill the infidels, which, you know, every Bible in the world says that, but it doesn't mean that we're supposed to do it.
Well, so it probably meant that we're supposed to do it, but it isn't being carried out.
Well, maybe it was supposed to be done 5,000 years ago because there was one tribe against the other. But this is a world where everyone has to cooperate and live together.
Well, on that score, let's take another break and we'll be right back and get into this in more detail.
We are happy to provide our audience with two very exciting musical odysseys with Stephanie Slevin, a singer-songwriter from the United Kingdom. One is called Show Number 7, A Galaxy of Song, and the other is Show 21, I Talk with Angels, in our Threshold Radio archives in VegasAllNetRadio.com and YouTube. Here is one of our songs.
I'll see you on the virgin shore, and when time doth fare me well, we will be as one once more. Goodbye, my love, I'll miss you so, for I don't want to let you go. But in dream you said to me that by my side you'll always be. Wherever I do roam, that you will be my telephone. Goodbye, my love, goodbye, my love. Goodbye, my love, goodbye, my love. Goodbye, my love, you fare thee well, and in due time my heart will tell everything you've shown to me, how to reclaim my dignity. Goodbye, my love, I fare thee well, you are the soul that rings my bell. And wherever I do roam, you are the heart within my home.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We could take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
My God! Are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying, whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born.
We're back and we're discussing some of the more serious problems that there are in regards to the Clintons. In a Real News interview with Michael Hudson, an economics research professor at the University of Missouri, who's the author of a book called Killing the Host, How Financial Parasites and Debt Bondage Destroyed the Global Economy, the question is asked, is the real scandal the Clinton Foundation? Let's listen.
Well, it's obvious that Hillary wanted to keep some information from the public finding out. The information that she wanted to keep from the public probably didn't concern national security so much as concerned her own private dealings, because nobody has, I think in American history, has merged their public service as Secretary of State or President with their private gains to the extent that Hillary really has. And by that, I mean the Clinton Foundation overall. Here's the problem that you can imagine. She's going to Saudi Arabia, she's going to Europe, she's going to the Near Eastern countries. Saudi Arabia has asked her, and this is all very public, we want more arms. We want to buy arms from America. We know that Saudi Arabia is one of the major contributors to the Clinton Foundation. On the other hand, Hillary's in a position to go to Raytheon, to Boeing, and say, look, do I have a customer for you? Saudi Arabia would love to buy your arms. Maybe we can arrange something. I'm going to do my best. By the way, my foundation is, you know, I'm a public-spirited person and I'm trying to help the world. Would you like to make a contribution to my foundation? Well, lo and behold, the military-industrial complex is one of the big contributors to the Clinton Foundation, as is Saudi Arabia, and many of the parties who are directly affected by her decisions. Now, my guess is what she didn't want people to find out, whether on Freedom of Information Act or others, are the lobbying she's doing for her own foundation, and which in a way means her wealth, her husband's wealth, Bill Clinton's wealth, and the power that both of them have by getting $250 million of grants into the foundation during her Secretary of State.
Now, to this point, as far as we know, there's no direct evidence that she did precisely what you're saying, and
no
actually say,
at all. But,
give money to the foundation, I will facilitate such and such contract. There's no evidence of that, correct?
That's right, and there's no evidence because her private emails are not subject to, were all erased. They're not subject to finding out this. We don't have any evidence one way or the other. So certainly there is no evidence. There's only the appearance of what looks to me to be an inherent conflict of interest with the foundation.
And there's no direct evidence that any abnormal amount of money has gone to Bill Clinton in terms of fees and expenses. And one could assume he's well compensated. But it does have charitable status. It has to file a 990. They are under, you know, charitable law regulations, and so far I don't know of any reporting that says that they have violated those.
Absolutely right. The advantage of being under charitable law is it's in a foundation that you can look at it in effect as your savings account. And you can treat it whatever you can do in the foundation, whatever you want. Now, if you or I had $250 million, what we'd want to do is influence policy, influence the world. Well, that's what they want to do. They want to use the foundation to support policies that they want. And here we're not dealing with unexplained enrichment. This isn't money that comes into them, that it goes into an offshore account in Switzerland or the Cayman Islands. It's hidden in plain sight. It's all the foundation. It's tax exempt. It's legitimate. So she's somehow been able to legitimize a conflict of interest in what used to be called corruption in office.
Now, although there was a bit of hedging about the actual culpability of the Clintons in the foregoing interview, there's a lot more edgy claim by Peter Schweitzer, who wrote a book called Clinton Cash, The Untold Story of How and Why Foreign Governments Helped Make Bill and Hillary Rich. I actually read this book before Trump used it in one of his anti-Clinton speeches, but he used it as a soundbite way, and this book is an extensive indictment. Let me just read you a tiny bit from the actually the book jacket, which kind of describes the point of view of the book. Most people assume that the Clintons amassed their considerable wealth through the lucrative book deals and speaking gigs that sometimes paid as much as $500,000 to $750,000. But who paid these fees and why? Often foreign businessmen and governments made the enormous payments, believing the Clintons would help advance their interests. As Peter Schweitzer reveals, the Clintons typically blur lines between politics, philanthropy, and business. Consider the following. Bill flies into a third world country where he spends time in the company of a businessman described as a close personal friend. Introductions are made, a deal is struck, usually to exploit natural resources such as uranium, oil, or timber on a large and profitable scale. Soon after that, enormous contributions are made to the Clinton Foundation for those who benefit from the deal, while Bill is commissioned to deliver a series of highly paid speeches. Moreover, some of these deals require approval or review by the U.S. government and fall within the purview of a powerful senator and secretary of state. Now that, I can't say that I know that the Clintons have been doing that or that Hillary's involved, but I do know that these are such substantial and detailed claims that they really need to be looked into. I can't make any final judgment about them, but what is even more potentially damaging to Hillary, although it never hurt her, was the release of a documentary based on the book right before the convention. Now, it didn't touch her, and that's interesting, but I think we should discuss the nature of these allegations. Ken?
Yeah, I think it's unwrittenly acknowledged that people who have such foundations are profiting from it some way. And it's not all in the open. They don't have to do anything underhanded. He doesn't have to sneak into the third world country. He can be there on a legitimate foundation business, take a huge donation, and then keep talking to his close friend, and lo and behold, something gets done and something gets passed. That's the way politics works.
Yeah. What do you think, Sarah?
I would have to agree. I think politics is a dirty game. And I just think they're pointing out what they're doing. I think you could point out that for anybody at a high level, unfortunately. I mean, that's kind of how things get done.
That is sort of the highest level, isn't it?
Well, if it depends on what they do with their foundation money. If they give them a bunch of money, $750,000, whatever, and then they turn around and use it, a big chunk of it, to really help people. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to really see it in detail.
The money is given to the foundation, but I don't know if the speaking engagement money is.
No, of course not. The speaking engagement money is theirs to keep.
So you get it. You're sort of having, if it's true, you're having a kind of a double whammy, and then these people are getting deals.
And also, there's a triple whammy because business needs help from politics. Okay, they work hand in hand. That's what I'm always trying to point out in my books, that the government is pretty much for sale. There's a revolving door. The people in industry are the people who are regulating the people in industry, and it's dangerous to have such powerful people who are so well connected to government. And it creates an appearance of impropriety for one thing. It creates a possible conflict of interest for another thing. And another thing is, who knows what's going on behind those closed doors? Who knows what deals are being struck? And basically, they're lobbying.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. Except they're doing it in a foundation and making it a little more transparent.
A little more respectable. A little more respectable.
The thing is,
and
also, what is the
it
money?
Might be a
is,
good thing.
Is the money really going to those places? That's another thing that the book talks about, the way the money is actually being used. And that's another question.
Well, you could say that. You could say that about any charitable foundation. There's always problems with the money not going everywhere where it's supposed to.
That's true, but those foundations don't necessarily have deals with other countries.
Yeah,
involved
by ex-presidents and current presidential candidates.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well,
good point.
So we're going to talk about something else, which is also quite serious. And let me play this clip about the possibility of election fraud.
Today, I had my poll worker training class to be a poll worker here in Orange County, California. It was a 3-hour class, mostly good, until we got to the issue of NPP voters, which in California is no party preference voters. When we were going over NPP, I was told that all NPP voters are to be given provisional ballots. I specifically asked, I had my handbook open. Let me show you in my handbook. Okay, so right here, the ones in bold are the parties that are accepting no party preference voters to vote for them. However, I was told that these people were to be given provisional ballots, always. NPP voters are always to be given provisional ballots. That's what I was told. I even wrote it right there in my notes at the bottom when I asked him the question. Well, I posted on some of the Bernie groups today because I was bothered by that, because I've always been told that these NPP voters here in California can vote for Democrats and that their vote would be counted. So I was a little worried that he was telling all 18 of us poll workers to give all NPP voters provisional ballots, because, we all know what happens most of the time with the provisional ballots. They are not being counted.
It turns out she and all other poll worker trainees were being lied to. According to the County Register's office, NPP voters must fill out a Democratic crossover ballot in order for the votes to count, not a provisional ballot. In other words, the trainees were told to give the incorrect ballots to NPP voters, and these ballots were unfortunately thrown out. Millions of Bernie Sanders' votes were not counted. Method 2. Bernie Sanders is also heavily favored among young Americans and new voters. But many of these young or new voters were registered as Democrats during the voting process, so the fake ballot tricks could not work. Many young or new voters were instead purged completely, finding that their registrations had magically vanished or switched to Republican. Without the young voters, Bernie Sanders was forced to compete with Hillary with old Democratic voters, but these are Hillary's strongest demographics. This puts Sanders at a crushing disadvantage. Method 3. Flipping the electronic voting machines. There are many reports of voting machine irregularities across the state. Poll workers in Los Angeles and Orange County report that Bernie won the electronic votes in the precincts by well over a 2-to-1 margin, the opposite of the result of the vote count. The contrast between this and the outcome is indicative of vote flipping. This result in another 7-figure number of Bernie Sanders votes not being counted. In fact, this is much worse. Millions of Bernie Sanders votes were actually counted as Hillary Clinton votes. This is sickening.
Well, so what do you think about that? We're talking about different types of fraud that haven't really been fully investigated, some of which were part of a lawsuit that I don't believe was actually started yet.
I think it's disturbing. I think that's why they keep saying the system's rigged, because they have their candidate and then they work to get their candidate through. It's just not how our government, how people want our government to work.
According to these lawyers that were involved with this lawsuit, they're actually claiming that Bernie Sanders probably won.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I do know that there's been a lot of voting irregularities during this primary election in a lot of different states. Some people didn't, the polls closed before a lot of voters got to get into it in some places. In some places, the votes weren't counted up. I think it's really horrible that that predictions were made on who the winner is before all the polls closed. You know, because some people said, oh, well, you know, Bernie's not going to win. I might as well not go because my vote doesn't count. There's a lot of improprieties that I think have to be addressed, and I think we need voting reform in this country.
Well, just the fact at the very beginning in Iowa when Hillary won six or seven coin tosses in a row? It was just from that day on, it was those little things add up and make a big difference. So they got Bernie Sanders people out there in droves, though, because people were hearing about those things. But also the superdelegate. So she comes out the gates with so many more votes than he has, right? So many more delegates.
And so that's another thing that's not fair. I mean, superdelegates, I mean, okay, on the one hand, you have a party and the party can do whatever they want to do. They can make their platform. They can propose their candidate. But in our case, we only have a choice between two parties, basically. I mean, it's a sad situation, but that's the way it is. So I think that there needs to be reform to the point where these delegates have to be bound by what the primary elections say that the people want, because it's the people who are getting screwed in the end. And
The most powerful people in our country are the head of the Republican and Democratic parties.
Well, look, getting whatever they want. The people are saying what they want, and basically the party saying, who cares what you want? Well, we want what we want.
Let me read you something from the new platform of the Democratic Party. It's called Fixing Our Broken Campaign Finance System. Democrats believe we must fight to preserve the essence of the longest standing democracy in the world. a government that represents the American people, not just a handful of powerful and wealthy special interests. We will fight for real campaign finance reform now. Big money is drowning out the voices of everyday Americans. We must have the necessary tools to fight back and safeguard our electoral and political integrity. Democrats support a constitutional amendment to overturn Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United and Buckley versus Valeo. We need to end secret, unaccountable money in politics by requiring, through executive order or legislation, significantly more disclosure and transparency by outside groups, federal contractors, and public corporations to their shareholders. We need to amplify the voices of the American people through a small donor matching public financing system. That's pretty cool, huh?
It sounds like all kinds of Sanders stuff.
It is. I mean, yeah. Look, what it looks to me like is that Sanders really negotiated for a lot of different things, including free trade, the elimination of these type of trade agreements, and really big things, student debt, you know, all this kind of stuff, and it's in these platforms now.
The trade agreement is a big deal because Obama has expressed his support of the TPP, and Bernie is against it, and he mentions it in his speech, and now it's in the platform.
Well, she came out against
that's
it.
She came out against the TPP.
Well, anyway, she came against this a few weeks ago, or even a few months ago. But
did you hear Jimmy Fallon slow jam the news with Barack Obama a couple months ago?
What was it?
Yeah, he one of the things he said it was. Jimmy Fallon goes, "Oh, you're down with TPP? And Barack goes, "Well, you know me." It was hilarious. But it's a departure from the administration that she's served in all this time.
Yeah. Well, I think she's departed from a lot of things.
I think she had to.
Well, I'm going to take us to a little bit of a commercial break here, and we'll be right back with the final parts of our discussion. Thank you. Originally, Zave Nathan came here from France seeking work as an actor and musician in Hollywood. Now he and his wife, Bonnie Glazek, write unusual and impactful songs, often addressing critical issues facing humanity. You can hear their story and some of their exciting music in show number 3 with Zave Nathan and Bonnie Glazek in our Threshold Radio Archives in VegasAllNetRadio.com and YouTube. Here is one of their songs. Well, first of all this stuff has been happening, which we're going to go into more, some of these details. But I'd like to just play a little bit from Cenk Uygur's discussion of what happened before the actual nomination occurred, when Sanders was meeting with the delegates.
I was at the Bernie Sanders delegate meeting, where they were enthusiastically in favor of Bernie Sanders and the revolution, and Sanders talked about the revolution, and it was fantastic, and it was joyous. Then he came out and talked about how bad Trump was. There was grumbling because they knew where he was going. And then he mentioned Hillary Clinton. Boo! The whole place was booing. He couldn't quiet them down. Nonstop boos. And then they started chanting organically, "We want Bernie. We want Bernie." And he said, "No, listen, we got to support Hillary Clinton. More boos." Okay, so Here's what the rest of the media couldn't figure out, and I believe I have. And that's why I wanted to do this for you guys. You know why they're booing Hillary Clinton? Because they don't agree. I know this sounds like funny, but the rest of the press is like, why is there unity? This is the point where people are supposed to fall in line and there's supposed to be unity. It's not about issue by issue. It's that the Bernie Sanders supporters don't want corporate control. They don't want donor control. And Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party establishment don't mind it. They actually rather enjoy it. They've gotten billions of dollars from it. And so no matter what happens on issue by issue basis, and whatever small concessions there are, at the end of the day, Hillary Clinton is going to take corporate money, donor money, she's going to take billions of dollars of it, and the Bernie Sanders people don't want her to. They cannot resolve that. It is an unresolvable issue. And therein lies the crux of the problem. And that is why this convention is likely to be 1,000 times more raucous than the Republican convention, more divided, and so it's about to start in a little bit, and I need you guys to buckle up, because there could be a lot more action here than there was last week.
What do you think of them booing him like that? What do you think of what Cenk said about basically the disagreement is so strong, and yet when we look at it...
Booing him for supporting Clinton?
No, the delegates were booing Bernie Sanders because they were supporting Clinton.
Yeah. He was in a position where he knew there was no way he could win. And he wanted his revolution to stand for more than just electing him to some kind of office. And I think that's a great thing.
I mean, that's what they do, right? They use their votes and their success during the presidential campaign to make platform changes and to have a voice in the party. And yeah. He's saying, I can't win this way, so I'm going to make sure that they really incorporate these ideas. That's the best thing he can do. I mean, because if he goes away mad, he's not going to be able to get it. This is the way to get more done, I think.
I agree.
Some perspective, maybe we're caught in between Scylla and Charybdis. Because there are problems with both of these people, and certain people are going to have to make a choice. And the choice is going to be, are we going to vote, or we're not going to vote at all? And which is kind of the worst possibility, somebody who is basically has a history of being an establishment politician, accused of certain things, but let's say at least an establishment politician following the generally policies of war and financial policies that are consistent with that kind of thing, and another person who's a loose cannon, who seems to be showing a lot of bigoted and prejudice against certain groups and other things.
I think people just don't know what to do. I think that after these conventions and they start debating, it'll be really interesting, because the candidates both move towards the center during the regular presidential election. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. There's still quite a bit of time left. It'll be interesting to see how it evolves. It's going to evolve a lot.
Right.
You think?
Trump's going to just go after Hillary, and Hillary's just going to go after Trump. Not that they aren't starting to now, but yeah. Oh man, fireworks are going to fly. It's going to be interesting.
Well, I don't like this business of name calling. It really brings us down to a low level in my eyes as a voter, and in eyes of people internationally, it brings us down. It makes us look stupid.
Well, you know, in the case of that little altercation. Altercation between Cenk and Alex Jones, what really started it was that he brought out a T-shirt that he had that had a picture of Clinton and the word rape on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, he did. He did. That's the one thing I really don't like is Bill Clinton did do some serious things that never. It's hard not to look at that as pretty serious. Problem.
No, I think it is a serious problem, but should we be floating around T-shirts with that
name?
Should
we focus on that? I mean, should we be focusing on that?
I mean, this isn't something he has been really indicted for. He does.
There's a lot of things that Bill Clinton did did wrong that are really important issues now, like deregulating the banks and things like that. And now we're talking about a new Glass-Steagall Act. I mean, that's the kind of stuff we should be talking about, what Bill might have done wrong, not what he's doing with his own, you know, not the improper things that he's doing, you know, in his own personal life or whatever you call it.
Well, the thing is that those issues impact millions of people. And lots of people can die because of those issues. And so they're just so important, and people don't, the average person doesn't even realize how important those issues. I have a show on this week on the global economy and fiat currencies. And I have Andy Hoffman from Miles Franklin. Miles Franklin is one of the largest, oldest precious metal dealers in the country. And he's brilliant. This guy's brilliant. But we're talking about fiat currencies. And I'm telling you, there are serious, serious issues. The problem is the average voter and the average person doesn't understand the most serious issues that we're facing right now.
Yeah.
Well, these issues, I mean, the whole thing about the world monetary currency system, I mean, it's so convoluted and so strange. It's hard for even people who are educated economists to get a handle on it.
And we're involved continual currency wars.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, the thing is, when you have a fiat currency like the U.S. dollar,
that's almost being everyone used, in the world.
Yeah, that's being used by everyone in the world. I mean, you have to treat debt seriously. You have to pay, not say we're going to pay back less. We're going to try to get a deal on this payoff on the debt. You got to offer more, almost. You got to say, look, this is the safest investment because you're never going to lose your money.
But that's
the only way the system works.
Yeah, but Ken, you have to understand that we're in a system right now where people aren't realistically going to be paying off their debt. I mean, we have country after first world country who are in debt that is unreasonable for them to ever pay off.
We see it happening right now with European countries.
We're in a very unhealthy situation. So all the resources are going, who's getting all that money? That's a big question.
Yeah.
But the thing is that we aren't using it to invest in our countries and the people and to have a healthy long-term, you know, environment.
That's true. Well, you read Terror on Wall Street, remember?
Well, yeah. And I mean, listen to my show this week. I mean, I've had a few of them like that. But my gosh, I mean, we have some serious issues. And it's like a company that's on the verge of bankruptcy. You go into bankruptcy, you restructure, and you set them on a path to healthy, you know, onto a healthy course of action. And every country needs to be on a healthy course of action for our people to thrive. And we are not in that place. And we need people with courage and determination to do what's right, because what's going to happen is a politician they don't want the whole system going down on their watch. So they're not going to do some of the hard things that are necessary because they don't want to do the hard things.
Oh, no, they didn't do it in 2008 and they're not going to do
it. Besides fiat currency, you have the problem that it's monitored by central banks now throughout the world. And since I monitor the stock market to some extent, I notice that anytime the Fed, our central bank, says anything, the stock market reacts strongly.
Of course.
Well, and the central bank is not a government bank. It's a privately owned corporation by very wealthy elites. So the question is, who's really running our country? Because whoever's in charge of the money is the one that's running the country.
Yep. That's right. And our legislators, except for certain ones like the Pauls, you know, have accepted it. It's just like, oh, it's a private organization. So what?
Yeah, it's another thing that's really hard to understand, what the function is, what happens behind the closed doors of the Federal Reserve offices and things like that. You know, people have just become accustomed to the Federal Reserve chairman leaving the report, the stock market reacts, and it's like a normal thing. But I mean, you compare it to what's happening in other countries, it's not a normal thing at all.
Well, they've come out now and admitted, a lot of central banks are admitting around the world that they're actually the ones buying the corporate stocks to prop up the stock markets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the scary part is you know, there's upwards of $30 trillion that I've been hearing that the Fed has put out around the world to try to keep things from collapsing. But my thing is, that's we, us Americans, are responsible for that. Even though it's a private company that runs it, it's the backing is the U.S. assets. I don't know how you can have a private corporation where you can issue stuff and the backing is somebody else's assets.
What about the fact that is...
That's the thing about how the elites use the United States government, for example, when they go to war. I mean, you've got almost one contractor for every soldier on the ground. There's people making billions of dollars on these wars, and who's paying for it? The American public, the soldiers who are dying in the fields. You know, it's the way they do everything, and it's wrong.
And it's right out there. It's being done right in front of people.
Right in front of you.
And this thing with the central banks, I mean, they're printing trillions of dollars just to control everything. And really, part of the goal here of the Fed is to create a certain amount of inflation, because inflation is another way of decreasing our debt.
That
inflation will affect our it's not right now, the money isn't really circulating, otherwise we'd probably be in a state of hyperinflation.
But you can't inflate, there's a certain point where you can't inflate it much more without the dollar being worth nothing.
Yeah,
and that's the problem that we face, is we won't pay this debt back. Period. There's no way.
No, it's never going to be paid back. It's just going to be it's going to be reinvested. It's going to be you know.
Yeah, but if you keep lowering the debt so that we have more cash to do things with, then the dollar becomes essentially nothing. I mean, we're on the course where the dollar it's becoming what MIT said 2032, just mathematically it's impossible to pass that because of the
And you see Russia and China are buying gold. What does that mean?
Well, and I had I had Irvin Goldman, top executive at JP Morgan. He says he fully expects the dollar to reset. He doesn't know when, but it has to.
Yeah. Well, I want to point out something since we've been talking about the economy. This type of issue has hardly been addressed at all by these candidates, the economy in terms of the
debt. Well, that's okay, because if Hillary gets elected, she's just going to say it's the economy, stupid, and we'll work on it day by day.
Well, then there's the other things that really concern me. One is the actual non-discussion about torture, non-discussion about surveillance. Of course, surveillance is one of the most serious things that's happening in this country, and I'm hoping that Oliver Stone's movie will do something about it, but I'm not sure.
Did you see the trailer on that? It was awesome.
Yeah. I can't wait. Listen, we're going to have to turn our, before we end this, I just want a kind of some comments that we haven't really gone into detail with about the fact that the Democratic National Convention seems to have evidentially really weighed everything in for Clinton versus Bernie Sanders, which they shouldn't have done.
No, it's absolutely improper, and they shouldn't have done it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, before we go, I'd like you guys maybe to tell us something about what you're doing right now. Ken, you just came out with a new book.
Yeah, I just came out with a new book. I actually talked about it a little bit on the show. It's called Beyond All Recognition. And it's about a soldier who's following orders in the Iraq War, who gets court-martialed for following orders, and basically it exposes the whole fact that we went to war on a bunch of lies, and for the profit of the elites, and all this stuff is out there. And like my usual faction series, my legal thriller series. In the end, I have an essay that pretty much tells you all the facts and where to go to look for them.
Yeah, I think that's important, because people often don't get things through the news or through reading books, because they get it, they hear it, but they don't feel anything about it.
Yeah.
And that's the value of dealing with people's emotional intelligence through fiction. Sarah, why don't you tell us something about what's coming up with Business Game Changers in your life?
Oh, I have some amazing shows that I have done and some amazing shows that are coming up. But I have one that's going on right now, which I talked about, which is on the global economic situation. And then I did one last week, which is still up there on podcast, which is amazing. If you follow Bitcoin, I actually interviewed the first inventor of blockchain, and it's not the anonymous group that people are talking about. He came out with it. He published it a good 6 months before they did, and he actually came out with it in 2000, which is 8 years before that. He just didn't patent it until about 6 months before they did. But it is absolutely fascinating, some of the shows I have with the leaders, top leaders in the world. So you got to check some of those out, sarahwestell.com.
And Ken, how do people get a hold of your books or at least your website?
Well, they can go to kennetheade.com, or they can find my books on Amazon under my name.
Well, thank you for coming, and we will be back next week with another exciting episode of Threshold Radio.
This is fun.
Thanks for having us, Johnny.
Thank you.